Today we have the privilege of talking with Dr. Peter Borton. He has a book called The Well Life, How to Use Structure, Sweetness, and Space to Create Balance, Happiness, and Peace. And Dr. Borton is the author of this book. He's the co-author of this book. He's a creator of Rituals of Living Online Community and Dragon Tree, a holistic wellness brand. He's a doctor of Asian medicine and helps people attain whole health of body and mind. He's authored hundreds of articles spanning topics such as stress, emotional wellness, nutrition, fitness, and our connection with nature. The website is www.thedragontree.com. Peter, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks, Wynn. I'm happy to be here. And I should also say that my co-author is my wife, Brianna Borton, who's under the weather and who definitely shares plenty of the credit for the list of things that you just mentioned.
Great. Well, this program, Freedom from Addiction, on iTunes podcast, tries to relate different issues on all aspects of addiction. And the one that I saw with the closest tie-in with your book, The Well Life, is that we both think that spiritually mission or purpose in life is terribly important to having a better life and, the way I see it, an addiction-free life. So let's talk about your book. Give me an overall sense of who you're talking to and how you're trying to get them to have the well life.
Well, you know, we're really talking to anyone who is keen to grow and to improve their life and to live closer to their potential. And my wife and I both have Eastern medical practices, and over the years we noticed a lot of people who had basically functional bodies and minds, who were healthy by the usual standards, but whose lives weren't really an extension of that health, who struggled financially or felt like they weren't doing work that was meaningful or purposeful to them, or who didn't have the kinds of supportive, healthy relationships they wanted. And we started to think that our definition of real whole life wellness needed to be expanded, and that true wellness should include the ability to really actualize your potential and have things like a meaningful work and the ability to have some sort of outlet for honing and sharing your gifts and all the other things I just mentioned. And so we went about beginning to systematize a way to teach our patients that, and eventually that became this book.
Okay. The big idea, according to your publicist, is that most people whose lives have swung off course cannot fathom how to get them back under control. They can't see the way out of an unhealthy job, a bad relationship, or poor self-image. Now, over the years, I have come to understand that the root cause of all addictions, whether it be the typical things that you think about or something as different as negative thinking, all relate to two things. One is poor self-image, and two is lack of spiritual consciousness. Now, how does your book help people improve their self-image so that they can decrease their chance of living a life of an addicted behavior which is hurting them?
Well, we speak to this idea at length in the book, and I'm not entirely sure what you're defining as self-image, but we like to make a distinction between the terms self-esteem and self-worth in the book, which are sometimes used interchangeably, but as we see it, your self-worth is a simple fact. It's just what is. You are an expression of the divine or a child of God or however you like to put it, and therefore your self-worth is something that is undiminishable. Your self-worth, if you, you know, became an amputee or you lost your hair or you lost your job, your self-worth would be undiminished by those sorts of changes in your appearance or your social status. And so because self-worth is just an unchanging fact, the thing that it seems people really can change is their remembrance of that fact, their consciousness of their worth. And I think the more conscious we are of that worth, the more we're apt to share it with the world.
Okay, so I think we agree on that point, that your self-worth is something that you may not appreciate. You may have a low self-esteem because you don't spiritually understand how great a self-worth you have. We agree on that?
We do. I think for a lot of people, the best way to kind of get an objective sense of that worth is to start sharing it with the world. And you start to see the impact of that worth on other people's lives and the environment or your community. And if your mind is such that, you know, it doesn't let you have access to that sense of worth because of your own issues around self-image or self-esteem, then to make that worth manifest in the world so you can see the way that others are affected, so you can see your value in the world, oftentimes I think that's a good way for people to finally get hit over the head with it, that you matter, you make a difference.
Right, and I was thinking that the way that this relates to what I've been doing for the last 30, 40 years is that your mission or your purpose in life, which you may or may not have figured out yet, is the way to increase your self-worth, your self-esteem, and when you do that, you decrease the tendency to have addictive behaviors because you don't really need them any longer. So that's how I see the tie-in between your book, The Well Life, and my book, Freedom from Addiction. And so tell us how you have written about things that might make this change in understanding or spiritual consciousness better for the individual, and define it in three terms that you talk about in your book with a definition: sweetness, structure, and space.
Yeah, so we both come from backgrounds. Our training are in systems that utilize the elements of the natural world as metaphors for all sorts of facets of human life, because on some level, I think we all really understand the way nature balances itself, the way fire and water and air and earth all kind of relate as one unified whole. So I think it kind of, as a natural extension of that, we started thinking about establishing this kind of wellness through like an interplay of different elements. And what came to us were three elements, three basic ingredients. And sweetness is our term for all of the feel-good stuff in life and all of the soul-nourishing stuff, things like stretching and exercising, hanging out with friends and family, taking a bath, cooking, eating. For many people, the stuff that makes life good or sweet. And it's also, unfortunately, a part of life that we let kind of fall by the wayside when we get stressed. We think of it as just a treat or... And unfortunately, it's also a part of life that I think people are prone to let fall by the wayside because we think of it as just a treat or a reward that we can save until all the work is done or maybe till retirement. And so we're always encouraging people not to put off the sweetness because sweetness is not just a treat. It really, when we cherish it and prize it and prioritize it, it nourishes us and makes us better equipped to do our work in the world and to not feel like some part of us is being neglected in the meantime.
I don't want to get you off. I don't want to get you off track, Peter. But how is that like living in the moment?
Oh, I mean, we often encourage people to schedule sweetness types of activities throughout their week, like hanging out with friends or getting a massage or taking a bath or something like that. And a lot of people say, that's great, but I don't really have time for that. So the other facet of having more sweetness in your life is about scheduling more of these kind of sweetness activities, but finding the sweetness that's already in every moment, that's already in our daily routine by bringing a greater degree of presence to whatever we're doing, by really immersing ourselves in what we're currently engaged in rather than departing in our minds as we usually do. And there's always a sweetness there. You know, the people that we allow to ring up our groceries without paying attention, maybe not even looking them in the eyes, if we drop into that and treat them as a, you know, our brother and be open for a connection there, there's always going to be sweetness in that.
How does this relate to being grateful on a daily basis and professing what you're grateful for?
Well, I think it's a wonderful practice for everybody to have to regularly take a moment to recognize so much that we have that is working, that's good, even in the midst of difficult times where we think that life's not going the right way. And so it's specifically what we were just talking about, that sweetness that's always available, that leads to a sense of gratitude even, you know, even during the hardest of times. I think there's always something that we can point to that's going right for us. We can always ask ourselves, well, what's working right now? I know that I don't have enough money for rent, or I'm sick, or some other troubles are besetting me, but there's got to be some sweetness here.
It could also go back to the thought, I woke up this morning.
Right.
There's a lot of people in the world that did not. I can be
right. I woke up and I took a breath.
Okay. Okay, so seeking out the sweet part of life is one of the three things. And now, how about structure?
So structure is our term for all of the life kind of architecture that we use to get from point A to point B, and it's the plans that allow us to do everything from simply get up and make it to work to the really big life goals, say, of moving to a tropical paradise and doing stuff that really makes you happy. And everybody has structure, but not a lot of people regularly examine their structure to determine if it's really serving them. So oftentimes we use metaphors, we kind of ask people what the structure looks like that's going to get them to the life of wellness that they really want. And maybe as they describe it, a picture emerges of like a clothesline and the bridge over like a giant canyon, and we say, yeah, that might get you there, but it looks like there's not a lot of support involved. Seems pretty precarious. There are other people who maybe their version of structure is like a concrete pipe over that same chasm. Maybe that's the way climbing the corporate ladder is to them. So they're pretty likely to make it across that chasm, but at the expense of any along the way. And so we encourage people to allow their life structure to be something they more consciously build, like a beautiful piece of architecture with a lot of grace involved and a structure that allows them to weave their own gifts and creative expression into it. And so it becomes meaningful the whole way. It's not, if they never make it to their destination, it's not a big loss because the journey itself was so rich.
Okay. And then the third thing that you talk about in your book is space. Can you tell me about space?
Yeah, space is the opening to something beyond kind of our mundane consciousness. Space is where divine input and intelligence comes to us through. Space is what we access when we meditate. It's how creativity comes to us. It's how we expand and grow. There's no room for flexibility and growth if we don't have any space in our lives. And a lot of people feel overwhelmed on a day-to-day basis because they have so much to do. And when we talk about space, they say, "I don't have time for space." And it's similar to how you mentioned presence earlier. You can make space even in the midst of a hectic life and a busy schedule by dropping in and going deeper, engaging more deeply, and kind of stepping back so that you're not at the mercy of your mind all the time. So we find that one of the biggest encroachments on people's space these days is what we refer to as the human data stream, which is all of the Facebook and Twitter and videos and news and all the other media that's constantly pouring through our lives that we feel like we need to keep up with a lot of the time. And it sort of causes us to kind of engage with life in a shallow way because there's so much material there that we can't possibly go deep. We have to just sort of browse. And we don't really want to find ourselves just being superficial in that way with the people that really matter to us. So space means going deep again and dropping in and engaging with whatever we're engaged with and not, again, letting our mind wander and feel like we need to pick up our phone every minute.
Okay, so if you're identifying with Dr. Borton with his comments about sweetness, structure, and space, and would like to find out more about them, Peter, tell us how to get a copy of your book.
Well, there's a website just for the book, which is thewelllifebook.com, or our main website where we offer courses and teachings on wellness and so on and products is thedragontree.com.
Okay. Is it available on Amazon?
Yes. They can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
Books a Million.
I want to jump to another thing that I read in the materials that your people sent me, and it is this concept: why keeping your word may be the most life-changing habit you could adopt. And I've got my own personal opinion on that, but first I want to get yours.
Well, I think, you know, this really is an important one for people struggling with addiction because chances are there's been a major lapse of integrity. So your word, you know, we believe is a powerful tool of creation, and it's the basis of our integrity. And most of us are okay, maybe even pretty good, at keeping our word with other people. If we set up a meeting with someone, or we're going to meet them for lunch, or we tell someone we're going to pick them up at the airport, we do it because we're concerned about our relationship with them. But most of us are not nearly as good at keeping our word with ourselves. And chances are, all day long, we make little agreements or big agreements with ourselves. Things like, I'm not going to overeat tonight because I know it's not good for me. Or I'm going to work out every day. Or I'm going to get up when my alarm clock goes off. And we tend to just not treat those agreements with the same kind of respect that we do agreements with other people. And so we break them. We hit the snooze button, or we do overeat, or we skip our workout. And over time, all those broken agreements undermine our trust in ourselves. And it's very hard to create anything significant in life without self-trust. I think as soon as we decide, now I'm going to really do something big. I want to buy a house, or I want to move, or I want this new job or something. If we have years of broken agreements in our history, I think, you know, the mind very readily comes up with this, oh, no, you're not. Chances are you're not going to keep these agreements, and this isn't going to happen. It undermines our ability to do anything big or significant or new with our lives. And anybody struggling with addiction has probably told themselves a million times, I'm not going to engage in this addictive behavior right now or today, and then breaks that agreement. And they've done it so many times that their self-trust is probably in the toilet.
Yeah. And the way that I define that as self-esteem or self-worth, because that's what causes you to have addictive behaviors. And if you don't have integrity, if you can't trust yourself, you don't have a very good self-esteem. And so one of the ways of elevating your self-esteem or self-worth is by always doing what you say you're going to do, whether it be with
exactly.
other people or with yourself. And you may have to start taking baby steps, but if you don't have integrity, you don't have self-esteem. And if you don't have self-esteem, you're going down one of the pathways of addiction. Now,
yeah, we say the exact same thing, really, that it often starts with a rebuilding of trust that might involve just making one or two little agreements that you know that you can keep and building from there.
Okay, so I want to get into, together with sweetness, structure, and space, there are some essential strategies to balance your life and connect to your higher self. And let's just briefly touch on those, and you can define them and tell me something about them so they can go back and read it in the book. The first one is cultivate a positive mindset. Why is that important?
Well, you know, I think that for many people, our tendency is to spend a lot of time thinking about what we don't want to happen. And it's a shame, if nothing else, even if it doesn't have a direct effect at shaping our life circumstances, excuse me, it's if nothing else, a shame to sort of pollute our consciousness by mulling over how we don't want things to go for us rather than focusing on the way that we do want things to be. And we talk about it sometimes as being kind of like a gold thread, like a vein of gold that you've just tapped into in the earth when you happen upon something good, some bit of good news or something positive or a recognition of some way that you're blessed. From there, you can go with it and amplify it and share it and rev it up and be glad and rejoice. And in that way, you kind of continue to follow that vein of gold in the earth. And you can just jump from one good thing to the next, and there's a sort of amplification that occurs. But just as important is to kind of catch yourself from veering off into the dirt which means beginning to recognize the ways that you degrade your consciousness by, you know, engaging in media that maybe is just doesn't serve you or is negative. Or, you know, I've had a lot of patients who I think a lot of their energy ends up getting consumed by reading sensationalized stories of violence or watching like feel bad movies. So clearly when you're staying in the positive, your intentions become that much more focused and amplified, and I think you're able to be more effective in the world.
Okay, the second point is to optimize your wellness.
Well, that is kind of a big one, but there are some basics, and one of the ways we address that is by guiding people to have a foundation of physical and psychological wellness before doing anything else, so that whatever they take on, they'll be that strong base. And that includes, we cover just 8 practices that we feel give people the biggest bang for their buck, as it were, in terms of their investment of energy. Things like eating well and moving your body and having some play and laughter regularly in your life, and having a practice of some sort of stillness, whether it's meditation or yoga or just being out in nature, things like that.
Okay. Envision attaining your dream life.
Well, this kind of goes back to the positive thinking piece, which is that I think it's hard to bring something into being without a clear idea of what that's going to look like for you. And when you figure that out, and ideally that would be with respect to your life purpose and in accordance with your core values, and hopefully in a way that allows you to use and share your gifts, you get a clear sense of what that life would look like for you, and that becomes kind of the lighthouse that you're aiming for.
Is this using the process of creative visualization?
That is one way that we address that, yeah.
Okay.
I think there are a handful of ways to go about it, but visualizing it, and maybe even more, allowing yourself to feel it. There was this philosopher, Neville, who wrote a handful of books probably that you and your listeners are familiar with, where he talked about what he called something like the law of reversibility as a basis for prayer. And he would say, so he said something like, if a particular set of circumstances produces a certain feeling in you, then cultivating that feeling can help bring about that set of circumstances. So if having enough money would make you feel at ease, then cultivating that feeling of ease around money is more conducive to bringing about those circumstances.
Okay, your fourth point is defying your superpowers.
So superpowers is just the term we use for your core values, your gifts, and your life purpose.
Okay.
And they can be so your core values are the things that really matter the most to you, especially when you know, when you're in a challenged position or time in life. You know, it might be things like kindness or integrity or equality, and we lead people through a process for figuring out what those core values are. And then your gifts are the things, your sort of innate talents that you feel are part of what you're here to share with the world. And then your life purpose, well, we've already talked about that, but as we see it, life purposes inevitably relate to, in some way, serving the world.
I agree with you. Totally, 100% yeah. There. Okay, so the fifth point is curate a supportive community.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw some recent research that was done on addictions and community. In one of the studies, I believe it was rats who had an option of continuously accessing a dose of something. I don't know if it was heroin or cocaine. And the rats that were isolated ended up becoming addicts and just pushing the button over and over. But the ones that were in community with other rats, they rarely took advantage of it, and they didn't seem to develop any addictive behaviors.
One of the
go ahead.
The hallmark symptoms of addiction is boredom. You just like not in community. You're just bored in your life and existence, and that's probably what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think boredom has a lot to do with it, and it's really the case with many different psychological disorders that if you could direct your attention to other people and seeing how you could be of service or how you could listen or how you could share something of value, then the attention comes off of yourself, and in many ways that attention may have been to sort of a pathological degree, but then when you start focusing on others, suddenly it kind of frees you up, and you realize other people have problems, and there are ways that you can help and be part of a greater community and have people hold you accountable, and they expect you to show up, and that makes all the difference, and it also contributes to longer lifespans.
Well, Peter, the last point, which we've already discussed, was to keep your word. So those are some of the strategies that you can use, and you can find out more information about those by getting a copy of The Well Life. And you can get that at Amazon, or perhaps you could order it from your bookstore at home if you'd like. It's been a real pleasure trying to put your work and my work together, and there's a lot of things that I've seen that are right on with respect to how you want to change your way of thinking in order to improve your life. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you today, Peter, about the well life and about freedom from addiction, and I honor you in your work and wish you the best of success in life, and maybe we'll have a chance to talk again in the future.
Thanks, Wynn. I greatly appreciate it, and I agree. It seems that we really see eye to eye on almost all of this stuff, and there's a lot of overlap between our work. So I'm honored as well to have been able to talk to you and to your audience.